This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
Kohene moana baika tōku wenua. Nō kaitahu, nō Ngāti Tua Rangatira, nō Te Atiawa, nō Ngāti Raukawa, hoki ahau, i te taho taku pāpā, i te taho taku māma, nō Ingarangi me Te Amani, he kai waiata, he kai tuhi, ahau, he kai whakaako hoki. Kei te whakaako ahau i te tuhi. Te tuhi a toi me ki. And in my spare time, I work
not for... doesn't sound like there will be much after that. Yeah.
So I'm a writer and a musician, and on my dad's side, I'm Māori. I come from those four iwi, Maitahu, Ngāti Raukawa, Ngāti Toa Rangatira and Ngāti Raukawa. And on my mum's side, her people are from England and Germany, or Bavaria to be precise. And I work as a writer and musician and as a teacher and sometime producer. And in my spare time, I work for Quitline, helping people give up smoking. Yeah.
Sheesh. Have you always written and song written?
Well, since I can remember my first book was when I was 8. Sitting on the steps of our little state house in Whakatane in Awatapu, and I was writing, I can't remember exactly what, but it had lots of chapters and there was a shipwreck in most of those chapters, so that's all I remember from that book. Fortunately, the manuscript hasn't survived, probably sea damaged. And then I remember writing poetry through my teens.
Angsty?
Angsty poetry in my teens. And then at university I showed it to a literature lecturer, and he was kind enough not to say it was dreadful. He said something like, you could turn the volume down a little bit, something like that. You know, something kind but useful. And then I did a course at Vic, at Victoria, with Bill Manhire before it turned into the huge monolithically fabulous thing it is now. And then I did the Masters, which was monolithically fabulous. And that was in 2002. So, yeah, pretty much from when I was 8. I mean, I've said this before in other kind of places, but my accountant used to say that if, you know, you should do for a living what you were doing for fun when you were 8.
Wow.
Yeah, other people have said seven years old.
I've been making forts.
Forts.
Like houses inside them. Houses. Yep.
Yeah, I hear there's a position going for that.
Like Building New Zealand or something.
That's right, yeah. Fort maker. Yeah, I just saw it the other day. So I guess I was right. He was counting money and I was writing a little book, so yeah. All has worked out, except we just need to get you into that fort-making position and it would be all sweet.
And were you always encouraged to write, or was there a real kind of anti-artist thing? Oh, they don't make money and they're always depressed and they...
No, not really. There was no... I think that basically my parents were just pleased that I was alive. And
it's always good.
Yeah, and kind of sane and getting some good marks at school and stuff. They were proud of me for the English... you know, achievements I made in English, and thought I was going to be a journalist, so I did journalism for a while, and then I kind of realised that as a journalist, your best day is everybody else's worst day, you know, and I just couldn't carry on. I'm too sensitive, so such a sensitive flower. So I left that alone, and really they haven't hassled me. I mean, they do worry that I'm not in my own mansion and all of that, but I'm too old for them to really have any say now. Yeah.
And around being takata poi, have they always been supportive about that, or is it
again, they
dramas?
Haven't had much choice, you know. I mean, I've just been quite bossy, I think. I mean, my mum was sad and thought that it meant that she wouldn't have any children, which is not necessarily true, as we know. My dad was like, oh, right, okay. He was a bit shocked, I think, but not so as you'd notice. He's always really rolled with it, Dad, eh? And they've both really embraced my partners, my various partners, male and female, and of varying orientations. Yeah. So I haven't got any complaints in that department, which is great. The rest of my family, most of them have been good. A couple have been really vile, but we just don't see them anymore.
And have you always known?
Oh,
Well, when yeah. do you kind of remember first thinking?
I remember first thinking, I fell in love with my best friend. Didn't we all, if we were really honest? Fell in love with my best friend when I was, 14. And, felt feelings for her that perhaps she didn't feel for me. But I didn't really have any words to describe it at that point. But, when I did start describing it, a couple of years later, I've always thought, oh, you're bisexual, that's cool, that's me. I'm fine with that. I haven't really ever had any lack of self-acceptance around it. I don't know where I got those positive vibes from, because there's a lot of negative vibes out there, I've found out later.
There was nothing, no kind of negative stuff when you were at school, or not that you picked up on?
Not that I picked up
maybe
on.
Maybe you were buried in a book.
I was probably buried in a book. Yeah, possibly. I knew that it wasn't an okay thing to say that you were, out loud as a teenager at school, but I didn't feel that myself. I felt quite comfortable with it myself. Yeah, and always have. Yeah, so I don't have any of those stereotypes of bisexuals being, promiscuous or, disingenuous liars who are just going to play with you and then, all of that stuff. I just missed out on all of that. I'm quite glad, really, because it's such crap.
Have you been confronted with other people's views
of
that?
Yes, over and over again.
Really?
So boring,
yeah. In this day and age?
Absolutely. It's just that thing that people think that it's more to do with the label bisexual than the actual person being an asshole, right? People can be assholes from all sorts of persuasions. So, not denying that there are bisexual people of ill repute, but I really don't think there's a higher percentage of us. That whole thing about the difference between being monogamous and non-monogamous too gets mixed up with being bisexual. Again, not that there's anything wrong with either, but it's not the same. People say, you're in a halfway house, you're not making a commitment, you're not political enough, you blah, 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 blah. Well, just me as one person, I can, in the life I've led, I can refute every single one of those claims, and I'm sure I'm not alone. So I think we should... That's a great dress. Can you just have a look at that dress?
It's fantastic.
It's this woman, it's a little pink dress, and it's actually got a hoop. But it's only a short
dress. The hoop, eh?
Oh, the hoop.
You can store good. Things under it.
That's right. Who knows what's going on under the hood? So, yeah. I'll stop raving and ranting about that now.
And did you grow up in Wellington or in Whakatane?
I grew up in
all over
Whakatane and Nelson, mainly. And I've lived in Wellington and the environs of Wellington for the last 15 years, terrifyingly. Yeah, since I got back from... I was in England and Europe and Zimbabwe for a few years. When I got back from there, it was 92. So, yeah, it's actually been about 18 years. Oh.
Wow.
That's all right.
Yeah, and have you always had a... assuming you identify as an adult, has it been difficult as an adult kind of maintaining that creative process to keep kind of not just producing but keep creating? And
I've had the good fortune of having some massive boosts along the way, so getting into the course, getting into the master's course at the Institute of Modern Letters was a massive boost to my confidence, so that kept me going for a few years. And then my first poetry book was co-published by Victoria University Press, who are here in Wellington, but also Viggo Mortensen from Lord of the Rings.
Oh my.
Which is an insane
that
story.
That
it just doesn't, yeah, just doesn't sound like it would ever happen to a normal person, let alone a poet. That was one of those incredibly strange but wonderful boosts to my confidence and my star rating, my celebrity status went up massively. You can Google Viggo's name and my name actually sometimes comes up alongside, he's like Hollywood. He's a lovely guy actually, he was awesome. He was incredibly busy but took the time to actually do some editing and produce this amazing book that's got pictures and frickin' CD in the back and a hard cover. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I was the most hated poet in New Zealand for some time after that. Probably still am. And then I've had other boosts along the way. Oh, you know, like in my music, we got asked to play at WOMAD last year. I mean,
so do you have a band, or are you just self-titled as yourself?
I'm self-titled as a soloist, and then I have a duo with my partner, Christine White, and our duo is called Tanifa, and we do folk pop type songs, but with strange ambient sonic art type instruments made out of kitchen utensils. So that's quite fun. I don't know whether it was quite what WOMAD were expecting.
What kind of kitchen utensils?
Oh, anything made of steel. Chris makes contact mics, tiny little mics. So she puts them under a steel plate on a Black & Decker workbench, and then we use a cello bow, and we put steel things on top of that steel plate, and we bow those steel things. So it could be a cheese grater, or it could be a wine rack. What else have we got? We've got those little oven racks, you know, that go in grills, oven grills. They all make different sounds, and they all sound like different creatures. So that's where the Tanifa came from.
So you kind of are doing what you were doing when you were eight.
Yeah.
Clanging around in the kitchen.
Clanging around, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, and what else? You were saying, has it been hard to maintain? The main thing that's been difficult to get around is not actually, you know, the financial side of it or the routine side of it, really. It's the fact that I have depression. So I've had several bouts of severe depression over my life, and that just makes me really dysfunctional, and it makes anything seem worthless and hopeless and stuff. So I've had to be really disciplined about how I handle that. And I've got a really
good... Did you
good
worry that it was because you're an artist with all the
stereotypes
that's what they say. Of a tortured artist?
Yeah, that's right. I think, I don't know how that stereotype's got out there, really, because it doesn't discriminate. Depression doesn't discriminate. I mean, you know, John Kerwin's got a... He's all black. But I did... I guess it took me a while to take it seriously myself. I don't know whether that's because of that or because it just seemed like, you know, people say, oh, everyone's got depression. But yes, that's true, a lot of people do have it, but not everyone, you know, wants to die every day. So once it got to that point, I, you know, went and got some help, and I've got fantastic kind of medical
help.
Was
it the wanting to die that made you go, oh, this might be a bit serious?
It was that, plus the fact that, oh, as if that's not enough, it was just that, I've got a kind of pathological independence that I'm like, I've got to fix it myself. I've got to do it myself. And it wasn't even so much a stigma about taking medication or anything like that, but I think I did have that, but it was more to do with, you know, I think basically a distrust of Western medicine as well, and a distrust of handing my health over to somebody else, which is quite, in some ways, quite good. So what that's meant is I have asked for help, but I also continue to do all of these other strategies and techniques, ridiculously regular exercise and sleep and, you know, journaling and all sorts of other techniques. I just can't let them drop, which is actually quite good. It means that I'll live a long and fabulous life. Mm.
And so how would you describe your work for someone who maybe on the other side of the world that doesn't know who you are or doesn't know to Google Viggo Mortensen?
I don't know if there's anyone in the world who doesn't know who I am, Hannah.
Of course. How about aliens? Maybe aliens.
Oh, yeah. So I guess my work, what I do creatively would be, I'm very interested in sound. So sometimes that takes the form of the sound of poetry or the sound of music. The sound of music. Or, found sounds. Producing,
found sounds?
Yeah, like field recordings, those kinds of things. Most recently I was doing a residency in Australia, and I wrote a whole lot of texts, but I also did field recordings in all these outback locations and put them together, so it's a kind of sonic poem. So that's the thing that I'm most interested in at the moment. That said, I've just started a novel, like an idiot. Boy, novels are real hard.
They're so long.
Oh my God, they're so long. And there's a lot to know about writing prose. So I'm kind of a beginner there, but I'm working on it. I'm doing
What's caused that shift?
I've got one story I really want to tell based on my dad's childhood. So it just doesn't seem to work telling it in any other way. I wish me luck with that.
Good luck. Yeah. It is. So you did a residency in Brisbane. Have you done residencies elsewhere? Riding on your fame with the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I should be doing a Middle Earth residency. I've done one short residency very early on at the Stout Research Centre. It was a Reader's Digest Fellowship. I wrote most of my first album there. So that was awesome, very grateful for that. But apart from that, no, that's my only residency. Residencies are a bit of a coup in a way, because only one person can get them. So I've had other assistants, like I've had money from Creative New Zealand and stuff. It's probably better in some ways for me to apply for those funding things rather than residencies, because like my publisher said once, you know, only one person can get the residency, but they can divide the money out amongst. So when I do apply, I often prefer to apply for funds. But that Brisbane thing was a bit of an exception. They invited me to apply because I did a gig for them a couple of years beforehand and they really liked me. So they invited me to apply and I said, hell yes. And then I got it. So yeah, that was 3 months of Australia. Very different to New Zealand. And I wrote crap loads over there, which was great. And produced that CD while I was over there too, because I'm an overachiever. And just kind of examining my emotional reactions to being there as well, because I had these massive crying jags. I don't know where they came from, just huge. I mean, maybe I was homesick, I don't know, but they would just, you know, come on. I was in the laundry, or I was, you know, just got off stage or whatever. So just exploring that, like where that was coming from. The landscape over there, so extraordinary. Oh my god, the outback.
So different, eh?
Oh god, it couldn't be more different to New Zealand. Vast and silent, you know, when you really get down to it, and old, so old. So after I got over my anxiety attacks from being that far from the coast, as you know, the sea maiden that I am, it was awesome, actually. I felt profoundly calm.
Where did your, drive or influences or to create stuff? Is it, have you always been like that?
Don't know.
Or have there been kind of certain events or people? Or
I guess I feel an urge to mouth off about things, whether they're political or personal. Kind of, I've always sought some kind of publishing. So I guess that's what performing is in a way. It's publishing publishing my take on things, and so is the poetry. I do feel that urge, but it's definitely more towards, at the moment, it seems to be more towards the publishing rather than the performing, because performing kind of takes it out of me a lot. I don't have a character that I become, you know, that I can protect myself with. So it's just me up there on stage, and particularly if I do one after the other, I get really knackered. So I'm veering towards the talking in the books rather than talking on the stage at the moment.
So is it quite a solitary process? I mean, apart from your band? With in Taniwha. Is it quite solitary and you just potter around in your own room in your own shed? Or
yes, I mean, that's
it. Do you talk to lots of people? Or?
No, I don't. I try to avoid people. People are my biggest curse. No. It is quite solitary. I'm easily distracted, so I have to be quite staunch with myself.
Do they write that in your report cards at school?
Yeah, easily distracted. The one thing they used to write in my Plunkett book, which I've just been reading recently, is so funny. Loves all food. Growing well. Pudding for dinner. But no, on my report cards, no, I was always a bit of a nerd, not distracted too much, but as an adult, obviously that's all gone downhill. But it is fairly solitary, except I have a great writing group that I meet with regularly. We've been meeting for like 6 years, which is quite rare for a writing group.
Oh, how long do they usually last?
Not that long. Not that long. So that's been awesome. Great touchstone to have. And, I mean, the residency was awesome. I need to say, too, that it was Arts Queensland who gave me that residency.
Good them.
Good them.
You didn't get eaten by a crocodile.
No.
That's also good.
Yeah. And the Queensland Poetry Festival also, and the Judith Wright Centre was where I stayed. And the Judith Wright Centre is this amazing centre of contemporary arts in Brisbane. And, I mean, when I was there, I realised how vibrant the scene is there. And I guess it is vibrant here as well, but in different ways. Man, it's really happening there, and everything just seems a little bit more prosperous. You know, I'm not being all down on New Zealand or anything, but it was good to get my eyes opened a little bit on that level. And so, yeah, being over there, I felt less isolated, and it was a less solitary process, you know.
Did you notice that there was a kind of characteristic of New Zealand writers or when you're over there kind of compared to, yep, to other people?
Well, I felt for myself that I was way more self-conscious than the artists, you know, like I was too...
So do we have, like, tall poppy styles going on? Or?
I think so. Something like that. I just... People over there are like, yeah, let's do it. A bit more gung-ho, a bit more confident artistically. Really hard-working. And I brought that back with me, that feeling of like, yeah, I'm just going to do it, whatever. You know, everyone's allowed a dud book. Whatever gets you to the chair and sitting down and doing it, taking a few risks... I felt really inspired on that level from Australia.
Mm. So you're working on your novel now and a whole lot of other things, or do you do everything at the same time? Or
no,
do you concentrate
I'm
on
a
one
bit better on that nowadays. No, just the novel, and I haven't written a poem for a while, but I'm sure I'll write the odd one. There's a lot to learn with writing a novel. It's such a different animal, and I want to do it properly. I don't want to write this book and it goes in the bottom drawer like most first novels. So, as usual, I'm setting myself unrealistic targets. So I'll get back to you on that one.
Do you ever feel, I guess, pigeonholed or othered as a Māori writer or Takatāpui writer or anything? Or
Sometimes I wish that people wouldn't ring and offer me jobs just because I'm Māori. You know, I'm sure it's not just because of that, but I feel like, when is someone just going to offer me a job that's got no Māori things involved with it whatsoever? And I probably wouldn't say yes to it, you know, but it would just be nice to know that I was appreciated, I guess, or valued as an artist or as a worker for what else I have, not just those skills and links. But, you know, it's a fairly privileged set of problems to have.
It's a tricky dynamic.
It is a tricky dynamic. I'm not whinging because my life could be a lot worse. I do feel like sometimes that if people are picking up and reading my book because they want to read a Māori writer, that they're going to be thinking, what the? Because I guess most of the Māori authors that I read write, you know, very differently to me. There's maybe perhaps they're more immersed in the culture on a daily basis. Maybe grew up with it more than I did. I feel a little bit othered by myself on that level, you know. But by the same token, I'm really proud of it, and I'm really in love with the language and in love with the culture, so it'll always be there, I'm sure, for people to do with what they want.
And how do you feel about the kind of the whole, for want of better terms, the whole New Zealand literature, poetry scene? Or do you feel like there is one and you can see what it's doing, or...
Yep.
You just potter away by yourself?
Or? Oh, no. I don't go to a lot of things because once I'm back home in Paikakariki, it's hard to get me away from the beach. But I do kind of know what's going on, and it's really very vibrant here as well. The literature scene, the poetry scene in particular in Wellington is just awesome.
Do you think it's darker? You know, has it that whole stereotype of New Zealand
literature?
Well, literature and films being real dark. And do you reckon that's true? Kind of compared when you're in Brisbane, happy, sunny, buff Brisbane, buff people on the beach.
Not that I noticed. I mean, the subject matter and the content wasn't markedly different. Yeah. I mean, what I noticed over there is that there is a lot more opportunities for performance poetry. I think in Auckland we're a little bit more well served than we would be down in Wellington at the moment, anyway, because that changes to, you know, events and nights come and go. There's been great events here like Aotearoa. I don't know if you ever went to that. That was great. And other events. But at the moment, I think there's a bit of a dearth. But, Auckland, there's things happening. in general, I mean, it's a huge city, Brisbane, a bigger city, so there's just a lot more going on. I don't know, that dark thing. I mean, I love it, so I don't know whether I'd even notice it, you know?
So you do enjoy the New Zealand literature and poetry scene?
Totally. I'm listening. Yeah. I'm getting really into audiobooks at the moment, so I'm listening to Owls Do Cry by Janet Frame, and yeah, I've been reading a lot of Kate Camp's latest book of poetry. It's actually got owls all over the cover, so it's an owl time. Yeah, it's an owl period right now. Yeah, I do really love it. I'll always love it. I'll always feel proud of it and connected to it. I guess what I'd like to say to round things off would be, that thing of, you know, otherness or identity on that level. I'd really like us to allow our artists to be, or our people actually, to be what they are, and acknowledge that that can change over time. You know, for myself, I've had male partners, and I've had a female partner now for, you know, 10 years or something, or longer, 12 years. But I do kind of lament that people, you know, even just the other day, I was listening to a friend say that she'd finished her relationship with a woman and that she was about to date this guy, and that she wouldn't be able to go to the gay swim team that she normally goes, and I laughed because I thought, oh, that can't be true. But the other two people in the room were like, no, you won't. And well, they weren't exactly, but they weren't jumping in to say, oh no, don't be silly, you'll be most welcome. I so recognise the need and the importance of those boundaries and those, you know, queer only, women only, gay only, lesbian only. Absolutely, it's been absolutely vital for my health and my mental well-being over the years. Full respect to that. And yet I'd really like us to be more imaginative with how that evolves in a kind of three-dimensional way to match the fact that people are three-dimensional. Yeah. Or even more, it's more dimensional. So that would be what I'd like to say. And I guess that means whoever you are, artist, you know, whatever, chef, fort builder, whoever. Yeah, that would be my last word to the world, Hannah.
That's a great note to end on. Thank you very much for sharing with us and for your time.
Pleasure.